Were you aware that a 16 had never won before, and did you just kind of dismiss that ahead of time?
I think everyone's aware of that. Thanks for bringing that up again, but I was aware of it.
Doug Dowdy has covered UVA sports for more than 44 years with nearly 10,000 bylines. He's covered multiple eras, dealt with tons of coaches, and many, many players. One of his favorite parts about covering UVA sports is his relationship with the different players and the coaches. T-Dubs and Doug, I thought the conversation just flowed so well. I really like Doug Dowdy.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I think when I obviously prior to talking to him, but I think that if you're looking at a hardcore UVA fan, they probably are not big fans of Doug Dowdy. I mean, not just for the question he asked Ty, but a lot of times facts and things aren't straight in his articles, and people think he's a hokey fan or writing for a hokey paper, and there's all of that mixed up in there. But I think you're right. I mean, he's a really nice dude. Like, he's a really nice guy, and he knows who's, and he's a UVA fan at the end of the day, which I think is kind of lost in the mix through all this. Doug, he covered you. What did you think?
Yeah, so I remember all those guys and everything, and I just thought what was cool about the podcast tonight is that he liked doing it, right? Yeah. He enjoyed going down memory lane, enjoyed the questions, enjoyed answering them, and enjoyed, like, kind of his – addition to what he could answer, which is
having the media guide out was the first. That was a first for our podcast. Someone with media guide.
He was serious about his that's his craft, right? People talk about it. That's your craft. So you go with what you know.
Dougie, do you remember him as a reporter?
I do. Yeah, I remember. I remember his name. I actually remember him, his face and his name for sure.
Was there beef? Did you have any beef with him or no? Or yes, no?
I had beef with all those guys because not one of them was saying I should have been like the starter. I was the star. No, I'll be honest with you. I was really treated well by everybody at Virginia, top to bottom. So
that's cool.
Nope. No beef at all. No, they always exalted me to levels I didn't deserve to be. And, you know, cool.
I think people are going to love hearing about the 16 versus the one thing. His reasoning and explanation for asking Ty that.
Yeah, right. And it wasn't an intentional, like, nasty question.
Right? It
was an honest question from him.
Right, right. Which is still kind of mind-boggling. And we talked about it a minute ago. Like, when he talks about it here, he said for a 64 seed to beat a one. Which, I mean, we were saying that's obviously a 16 is never beat a 1, so there's no difference between asking that. But in the presser, he asked, did you know a 16 and never beat a 1, not 64 beat a 1. But once again, he mixing up the facts a little bit, but it's the same question.
Did you also I always wonder this about the reporters, their skin. You know, he commented on Ty's reaction and how he feels about that later. But I would think that he'd be like, oh, I felt bad. He didn't say that. He just was like, you know, this is what happened. It happened this way and that way and whatever. It's a very strange job to me.
It is.
A reporter.
To me, it feels like when I asked him about what was it like to see, you know, one shining moment, like to win a title, it sounded like he had a one-track mind of, like, finishing his job, not necessarily thinking about it, which I thought was interesting, right? Because if it was me and I'd covered UVA for 44 years and I felt some type of way, I'd probably have been like, who cares about the deadline? I'm just sitting here watching this. And he wasn't like that.
I thought the exact same. All right, right? Just one time, throw your computer onto the board.
Just be done with it, man. Right. What are they going to do to you? You turned it in late. Like, who cares? We just won a national championship, right? Covering the team for 44 years. They get to, you know. Anyway, thought that was really interesting, actually.
I agree.
Yeah, I got a chance to hang out with him in Minneapolis to go meet him for a drink. And he's really, really a nice guy.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, I think everybody should know that.
Yeah, I think so. I think when we talked about it earlier, I think most people will hate listen to this, and I hope they walk away with like, he's not such a bad guy after all. Like, he's kind of funny. He's, you know, I kind of get him a little bit if that's what people get out of this, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for setting it up, Mark. That was great.
I enjoyed it. I am so pleased, as the rest of the Locker Room Access crew is, to have Doug Doughty join us. Doug, thanks so much for coming on.
Well, you know, I really appreciate you having me, and seeing you reminds me of the first couple times when I met you and the first couple times we talked. And I guess the rest of you may have heard this, but there we were, and I am raising the, well, actually, maybe it was the next year that I raised the question of Kihei Clark. And the two of us would just stand there and go, how could they be playing this guy? And then, what is he? Is he like a preseason All-American now? I would come down from the press area there on the wing, and I'd bring Mark all the stats, the 15, 20 pages that they give you before the game, and I would give Mark the pages, and then we would start complaining about Kihei Clark. How could they have this guy, Kihei Clark, play? Look, he's like 5'6", and he can't shoot, and he's what does he do? And I guess by the end of the season, we got over it. But it was funny at the start. I mean, this is a guy who's, you know, seen as a real key for the team this year.
And how good he was last year, and how good he looked in the Final Four, the game against Auburn. I keep saying that we don't win, that there's no way UVA beats Auburn without him. And probably in Oregon.
Oregon, yeah.
Right? No way. And he suffered a lot of abuse from many people throughout the season. Absolutely.
But I remember all the it's funny because I would get the stats if they were in the postseason. And I remember leaving one of those games and giving your younger son about 50 pages worth of stuff to go through. And I don't think he looked at any of it. And I suspect you didn't look through any of it either, but at least you had access to it. So if you'd wanted to look something up, you could have looked it up.
I still look through stuff. I still look through those documents and those books and those media guides. I have them throughout in the home, in the apartment. But it was, I was going to go to Doug Smith to open up, but since you brought us how you and I met, let's stick with that. It was 2017-2018 season.
Yeah.
Weekend of the first game. I guess there were two games, like there was a Saturday and a Monday game. And I came down, and the family seats are right next to press row.
Yeah, yeah.
And you walk down. Somehow we bumped into each other, and we start talking. And you start saying, and I say, well, how do you think the team's going to be right now? And you start saying this and that, and this guy's good.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't that upbeat about it.
Well, whatever. You gave an honest opinion. And then you say the only thing UVA needs is a fast point guard. and then we start talking a little more. And then you introduce
and who
yourself.
Are you? And who are you? Turns out you the father.
Yourself, then I introduce myself. And I say, I'm Mark Jerome, the father of the slow point guard. And from that point on, we became very friendly. And every time we saw each other since, you gave me media guides. You sent media guides to my home. You called and checked in every once in a while. And I really enjoyed our relationship.
Yeah.
Basically. You know, they don't have media guides anymore. It's all on the computer. And it's killing me because I'm so used to having that magazine in front of me. And, you know, I got to look it up. And
wait, so let me get this straight. So Ty's first year, you said all they need is Kihei Clark. All they need is Kihei Clark, a fast point guard. And then the next year, you're like, why are they playing this fast point guard? No, I'm totally kidding.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, one of my chief memories of the Jerome family was when they lost to UMBC. And I asked the question, after the game, they had Ty was there and Kyle was there. And I asked the question, were you aware that a number one seed had ever lost to a 64 seat or whatever it was. And Ty looks at me with complete scorn, like, I know all that stuff. It wasn't maybe that it bothered him that the question was asked. It was that, how could anybody think that he wouldn't know that? I mean,
that's the question for you. How could anybody think that he wouldn't know that? You asked the question.
Yeah, well, you know, and I asked a question. You know, I had actually, before the game, looked up, and I'm not sure if I got it then or later, but I did some research trying to see what the history of the number ones against the number 64s were, and I didn't see it at first. So I thought, well, if I'm not certain about this, these players probably aren't certain about it. They don't look through media guides and whatever. And the look that Ty gave me was, I just wanted to hide under the chair. It was like he was more upset that I would think that he wouldn't know that than he was that they lost the game.
Well, I remember you and I had a conversation afterwards a couple of days later or a week later, and I was still so sour from the loss and then from the question. But then we had a little bit of a talk about it. And I got your perspective and I understood your side. And anytime someone raised it, like what a mean question, or what a, I don't know how to describe the question.
I only asked the question because I didn't know beforehand. I had to look it up.
Right. And that's why I told people, I was like, no, this guy is such a nice guy. You guys don't get it. He really is. And it wasn't to be mean. It wasn't to be, you know, it wasn't done in an irreverent way by any stretch. You guys have to get to know Doug, and he's the nicest guy. And he's really considerate and concerned about people. And people were like, really? And I was like, absolutely. And so, and I've really enjoyed our friendship over the last, what was it? Now it's four.
Well,
four
years. I can't even relate that weekend in Minneapolis. I mean, just walking up and down and back and forth to the arena and everything that went on. And I met Ty's mom. I'd never met her. And then Kobe. And Kobe, you know, he was. I'd known him for a while, though. I'd seen him at all these games, and poor guy had to carry all those magazines and media guides and stats around.
Yeah, you know, we had a good time, and we had a fun time out, and we went to the, where did we go, Doug? At an ale house or
yeah, one of the ale houses.
Yeah. That was a good time. That was a great time.
Where I met Ty's mom and realized that's where Ty got his height. she was a good player, right? And was she a good college player or high school player or whatever?
She was a solid. She was a good player. She was a good player. Yep. Absolutely.
So what is a guy like Ty doing right now?
So he just landed in Phoenix, and he was hanging out in Charlottesville. He was actually in LA last week playing with KD and Kyrie Irving and James Harden and I guess some other pros. And he was doing, I guess there's a video of him, T-Dubs, you probably saw it,
yeah,
video
great.
Of the ones,
yep.
Where he's playing against Spencer Dinwiddie and Kiel Alexander and what's the kid's name from Oklahoma City, from New York?
Amadou Diallo.
Amadou Diallo, yeah.
That was great. It was cool. That was really cool. We'll post it. We'll put that link in the description so people can catch that. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
He actually won a game. So, but he went out there with Dre. The two of them were along with London and a bunch of guys. Dev, before Dev went to Germany, they were in Charlottesville working out with Damon Altizer. The superstar trainer or trainer to the stars.
Yeah.
And they were here for a while. Then Akil came in. A bunch of different guys came in and out. And then
you know, Damon's from our area, I believe. Damon Altizer.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's from like Bath County or over there by the homestead. But he's a very good high school player in a not so big league.
Yeah. And then went to UVA. And then Ty and Dre went out to LA to go play and work out. So, but he said, Ty said Kyrie was just is unbelievable. He said he's so freaking skilled. He said he might be 6 feet, and he just is so talented. Maybe the most talented player he's ever seen, which is fascinating.
Really? Wow.
He's telling me he's playing as these guys, and I'm like, oh, I mean, my mouth is dropping. But then I remember, wait a minute, you played in the league last year, so you saw these guys too. So.
Right. He normally plays with him.
That's his peers.
Yeah, no, it's
that's cool.
The stories are pretty cool, how good these guys are. So, and then he just landed in Phoenix, and he's hanging out with his homie Grant Kersey. He just landed.
Oh, really?
Well, Grant's out there?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm gonna FaceTime. I'll FaceTime Grant in a minute. Yeah. My dude.
Yep, Doug and Grant. All right, Doug Doughty. What kind of player was Doug Smith?
No, I'm looking.
Go from memory. Don't read the nonsense.
No, I'm not looking at the stats. I'm just reminding myself of what teams you were on. I can tell you right now. 90-91 team. 21-12, 20-13, 21-10, and the last year would that have been 93-94? 92-93 my last year. Oh, okay. So
Sweet 16.
So you played on 4 20-win teams.
I assume so, but I don't even know that. Yeah.
Now, if you played in 89-90, you were on Terry's last team. Is that right?
Yes, sir. Yep, exactly.
And then the next three with Jeff Jones.
Yes.
I remember 1 year. I got a story to tell you, and it really doesn't have anything to do with anything. But I remember 1 year when Jeff Jones was the head coach. And for many years, I've been in a Tuesday morning bowling league. And morning. 1 year...
Huh? And Tuesday one year, morning?
Tuesday morning, yeah. And so 1 year, they were in the NIT when Jeff was coaching. One of those years when Jeff was coaching, they were in the NIT.
His first year. Yep.
And I had a pretty good relationship with Jeff. So anyway, I had decided I was not going to drive up to Charlottesville to come to the press conference that they were having before the NIT. And I had told Jeff, I don't come up there for NIT press conferences. So at the end of the bowling match, I got on the phone at the back of the alley and called into the press conference. And they said, Doug Doughty, you got a question? To which Jeff Jones said, are those bowling pins I hear breaking in the background? like I said, I don't pass up bowling to go to NIT press conferences.
But I'll bet you went to New York for the final four of the NIT though.
Yeah,
I bet you were there for that.
Well, I was at several NIT finals. I was at the. I was at the 82-83 game in.
The one prior to that, when the
NCAA final
that
four.
That was JJ. That was Coach Jones too, right? He won that.
It was 80-81. Another story there. I believe that was a day when I think it was the final. When the president got shot.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
And I'm trying to remember what all happened there, except there was a big, I don't remember everything that happened there, but I wrecked the staff car on the way home. But I've been to a few NIT championships.
So you've been doing this more than 44 years?
Like I said, I enrolled in, the fall of 1970. And so I worked at the Cavalier Daily, maybe not that I didn't really cover UVA basketball in 70, but that was the year that I believe that was the year when Parkhill scored the 51 against Baldwin Wallace. wonder how many people are still around who Barry's yeah. still around, but I wonder how many people are still around who were at that game.
I think we can find a few.
Yep. So
what was it like for you as at that point, you weren't really covering just your bright-eyed student. Was Virginia basketball on something that you thought about prior to coming to UVA, or was it this a whole new thing?
When I was in high school, my father was from West Virginia, and I think maybe went to West Virginia a year or two. So my favorites growing up with Jerry West.
And
the West Virginia teams. And I remember one time I was living in, we lived just outside, just over the Maryland line from D.C. And I wanted, West Virginia had come to town. They were playing George Washington. And I wanted to go to the game at the old Fort Myer arena there. And my father said, no, it's going to snow. We can't go. I disappeared, went down and got my bike and drove across town with a threat of snow and watched that West Virginia George Washington game. And I'm still not sure how I got home.
So
I was in my first year at UVA, I would keep stats on West Virginia from the Washington Post.
Oh, that's pretty cool. And so at what point did you convert? Yeah, what point did you convert to being a Virginia fan? Or did you
but by that first year, as soon as Park Hill's 51-point game. Because I could always say map. I don't know that it put the team on the program on the map, but another thing, Bill Gibson was the coach then. I was, wet behind the ears student newspaper guy. And I asked him a question. And I said, well, I assume such and such. And he says, hold it right there. You know what happens when you assume? And I said, no. And he goes, you make an ass out of you and me.
Yes.
So, no, that was Bill Gibson, and that's like 10 coaches that I've interviewed.
I'm going to ask a stupid question because I don't know. Was anybody between Coach Holland and Gibson, or was that?
Did he go Gibson, no, I think it was Gibson. Gibson was from he was the coach for 11 years, 63 to 74, and then that's why I brought the guy. Yeah. Gibson was a coach for 11 years. And as I look it up, I hadn't realized it had been that long. I think he just died a couple of years ago. And then Holland came in 74, 75. And 2 years later, they won the ACC championship. I was around for that. I always found it pretty interesting when Virginia won the ACC championship.
Yep.
The UVA in 74, the UVA ticket manager was John Swofford. And so, I remember that winning that ACC championship was one of the top five accomplishments for that program, which had not done anything to that point. And that's why it's kind of touching when Virginia won the NCAA championship that there sitting on the first row was John Swofford, who by now is the ACC commissioner. But I remember him as the UVA ticket manager when they had what to that time was, he was there for the two biggest moments in UVA basketball history.
That's pretty cool. That's amazing. What about Gus Gerard? He's somebody that we'd had as a guest on here. We've heard the legend of Gus Gerard and his abilities. What do you remember about him? Just out of curiosity, I was just curious.
I went up to his bar a couple of years ago, and we talked at length. And I remember when they were early 70s, early to mid 70s. They got this guy from New York named Ray Morningstar. Ray was 6'10", and they didn't have many 6'10" players at that time. And I was at the Cavalier Daily talking up this Ray Morningstar. Maybe that's what got me interested in recruiting over the years. And he was going to come down from New York and he was going to be the savior. Well, it didn't work out for Ray Morningstar. So I was talking to Gus many years later, and I said, whatever happened to Ray Morningstar? And he said, I dunked on him so many times in practice, he had to leave school.
That sounds like Gus. That's awesome.
And he just every day dunked on Ray Morningstar's head, and that was it.
And we never
saw the end of Ray.
That's incredible. Well,
he may have told us that story. I don't remember the name, and I would have remembered. But remember he said that they brought him back, and there was a freshman coming in, and he's like, Ray, I kept dunking on him.
That's right.
Stop dunking on this dude, yo.
That's right.
Yeah, he left because he's been dunked on too many times.
That's so funny.
It sounds like Gus.
Same story, yeah. Gus is awesome, man. So glad we connected with him.
And what was it like when Ralph Sampson committed, like for you personally? Was that a interesting time, I imagine?
Yeah, it was huge. I mean, I wrote about it all the time, and it's funny that I was not at the announcement at Harrisonburg High School where he said he was going to Virginia. I was at the PGA event in Charlotte, North Carolina. So I was covering golf also for the paper, but I'd written so much about Ralph that I don't know how somebody allowed me to go down that golf tournament when, you know, that's Ralph's signing. It was the biggest signing of any athlete that's ever gone to Virginia.
Yeah. At the time.
Maybe any time, right?
Yeah. What's seriously.
I've had a great relationship with Ralph over the years. He's a meek guy, and you know, I remember when they took down the bricks from U-Haul that he saved me one and autographed it. And of course, I don't know where it is now, he's been just a wonderful guy over the years. Let me tell you another story before I forget it. That was a great story. Those of you, most of you probably know Barry Parkhill, but when he started out of Virginia, he was Mr. BP, and you know, he was the talk of the campus. And I remember one time, after his career, he was playing for the team in Virginia Beach or Norfolk, and I think they were the Virginia Squires. But anyway, I came up to Charlottesville to interview him. And we were in his apartment during the summer one year, and his phone rings. And it's some woman who wants to come over and see him. And he tells her, "Hi, I'd love for you to come over, but I've got an old college friend here with me now." Yeah, I'm here with an old college friend. And I was looking around the room and said, "Gee, I'm the old college friend." I thought Barry hardly knew me from his playing days, but he's that kind of guy. I mean, he's not too, you know, he's not bigger than anybody. And obviously the current generations don't know what Barry Parkhill did for that program. But
yep.
he was as big as anybody could be till Ralph got there. And he was he's so mild mannered and, you know, had no ego that, you know, that's, I'll always, he would be on my list of the top five players to come through there, even though his numbers wouldn't suggest it. He put UVA basketball on the map.
Well, how many people have scored 51 points in a game in the history of UVA basketball?
No one else did. No, he still holds that record.
That's insane.
Yeah, I don't know what level Baldwin Wallace was. Yeah, and I haven't really studied it, but
I scored like seven once, Marky.
Dude, I keep reminding you, you played on a top national team 4 years. Like, how many people would trade places with you for that? That's incredible, Dougie. You can't undersell it to me. T Dubs, what's the most amount of points Ralph scored? Do you know?
Sorry to put offhand. I think it's like in the 40s.
I'm glad you guys.
41, 42.
Back in the days, I would have Mark would have had one of those media guys in his hand.
we keep going back to the media guys. It's amazing. I love it. Old school.
I literally was looking at one like last week, because TW and I have a friend who sent me the media guide from my playing days at Lafayette College. Ryan.
No, TW, you played
Ryan, it. Ryan Garko. Yeah, shout out Ryan.
Yep. My man Ryan said to me, and I'm looking at this media guide, and it's like the size of a postcard, right? With like six pages, right? And then I compare it to the UVA media guide. Like, that's what I'm talking about. Like the difference of you playing at UVA and me playing at Lafayette. What a significant difference.
All right,
so I've never downplayed my time in Virginia. It was, look, great shirt, the best. Best guys, the whole thing. So yeah. Best. And we also had the greatest reporters and question answers.
Crazy.
Guys that would remind you that you had three turnovers in 2 minutes against NC State at home and two fouls. How'd that happen?
Hey, I've been the one who's kept your career alive.
That's right. You called me. You're right. Absolutely right.
Appreciate what does that mean?
I was trying to get him to meet my son, who played for, and okay, let's see if you know some daddy family trivia. Who did my son play for? You don't know.
Blue Ridge.
He played for North Cross in Roanoke, where his coach was.
Curtis
Mark,
Davis.
You should know this. You should know this. Bill Hodges. Do you know who Bill Hodges is? He was the Indiana State coach when Larry Bird played for.
Oh, I didn't know.
So when Indiana State played against Michigan State, it was Larry Bird against Magic Johnson. And then like 30 years later, Bill Hodges, who coached that Indiana State team, he was coaching here in Roanoke and my son played for him.
That's cool.
I remember you telling me that.
So Coach Hodges was 175 years old in that game?
He's still out there. I'm trying to remember.
That's really cool, by the way. Really cool.
Yeah, that is. Doug Dowdy, while we're on the subject of coaches, in a range of, let's say, 2 to 3 minutes, and maybe that's not fair, maybe 3 to 4 minutes, can you describe to us Holland, you know, the different coaches that
from Holland Lito.
To TB?
Holland was kind of like a Abe Lincoln kind of guy. He's just the way he was built, and he was very polite. And but I think he drove those guys. I mean, he was I think a very good coach that may not have gotten his due over the years. But then obviously he had the Sampson years, and you know they were really good. But you know everybody would say it's because of Ralph Sampson. And, I think he's the measuring stick for all the coaches they've had. And obviously there haven't been a lot of great ones. I think that here in the last, couple of years that Tony Bennett has ascended to the throne of top UVA men's basketball coach. But Holland is definitely number two. And let's see here. Who are we talking about?
Pete Gillen.
Damn, I knew Pete Gillen from when he was an assistant at VMI. So I'd known him for years. And it was tough because I would always – there were certain things that he didn't like to talk about. And one of them was calling timeouts, because he would invariably call them early in the game.
Wait a minute. It's hilarious that you bring that up. Dougie muted us for a second. So when he comes back, because Dougie will tell his famous story, his Pete Gillen timeout story. But go ahead.
He played for Pete Gillen, huh?
No, he played for Jeff Jones.
Jeff Jones.
All right, let's see here. Gibson was followed by Terry Holland, was followed by Jeff Jones, Pete Gillen, Dave Lato.
Yeah.
I didn't really have much of a bond with Dave. As I look at his teams, You know, if I remember, John Oliver was involved with the selection of a new coach. And I think that Leto's last team was 10-18. They lost to, I think, in Atlanta in the ACC tournament. And I think they would have kept him, but Oliver wanted him to go out and hire a big time assistant. And Leto wanted to make his own choice. He didn't want to change coaches because John Oliver told him. And he declined to go out and hire, you know, a big time assistant, and they fired him. Or, you know, they gave him an ultimatum, and that's why he left.
Yeah. What do you know about that whole John Oliver thing? It was right when I moved back from Brazil, so I was removed from it. But I know Coach Little Page was the AD. But what was that role, and why did he have so much say so? You know, didn't seem like a very, very Virginia type thing for me.
Well,
kind of,
you know,
bad taste in a lot of our mouths. The, you know, former UVA guys.
You know, Oliver had something of a reputation as the henchman. That, you know, Craig was the AD and Oliver had to do the dirty work. And Oliver, I guess, as you may know, had some problems elsewhere in the other side. I think maybe he came up for the South Florida AD's job, and they came up and they discovered all this stuff that he apparently kicked everybody off in the.
I didn't know any of it.
But anyway, this is really interesting because to me, it's been, you know, 4 or 5 years since Oliver left, and people have forgotten John Oliver hired Tony Bennett and John Oliver hired Bronco Mendenhall. Now, obviously, you know, I don't know that I would put the Mendenhall hire in the same sentence necessarily as the Bennett hire. But those are two pretty good hires. And that's a guy who, you know, you got to look at the hiring of Tony Bennett as being one of the main big achievements in UVA, maybe sports history, hiring Tony Bennett.
Absolutely.
And John Oliver got that all done. And, you know, they hired Bronco. And then, you know,
I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be argumentative. I would argue that Tony Bennett made himself, not because it wasn't like a tough hire, meaning let's say he wasn't extremely sought after and then John Oliver pulled it off.
Oh yeah.
That makes sense.
I think I would not dispute that, but he, you know, he did the behind the scenes work
and that's fair.
And then, you know, I guess he left when he could see he didn't get the AD's job. But I think he deserves some credit for his involvement in those coaching.
Yeah, sure.
In fact, I think, and I, you know, I haven't talked to John for a while. I think he's in the coaching search business. We just may not know it.
Right. World Wide West, that type thing.
Yeah.
In the shadows.
What about Jeff Jones?
Thank you, Marky. Thank you, Mark.
What about Jeff Jones? I got his records right here. His last team was 11-19, and two of his last three teams had losing records. But his first five teams, 105 wins in his first 5 years. Pretty good.
Yeah.
And describe him.
2020, right? You said before.
What?
I mean, the ACC was, you know, he came after Coach Holland my second year. John Crotty's fourth year. Kenny Turner. I'm sorry. Yeah, fourth year. Kenny Turner, et cetera, et cetera. And the ACC was gunning after JG. He was 28 years old, turning 29, right?
Yeah, super young.
And do you remember we played back to back to back on Tobacco Road, Carolina, Duke, or Duke, Carolina, then Wake Forest on a road trip. and they were like, it was just trying to give the young guy a lesson, you know. And JJ was no stranger to it. He played all those guys, and he came up in the system, assisted coaching in. So, you know, he was, I think, phenomenal.
You know what I think is interesting is I look at all these coaches, and I'm sorry for cramming here, but I don't know that any of them was a great recruiter. And I don't know that, even a great recruiter is going to get kids for Virginia that Duke and Carolina can get. But, I think you look at the coaches there, particularly Holland and Jones, you know, that their coaching was superior to their recruiting. And a lot of times you get a recruiter and yeah, that guy's going to do well for a while. But, I think, and I don't know that Tony Bennett was, when he came in, was viewed as a great recruiter. I mean, where he'd been, Washington State. I mean, what kind of recruiting battles are you going to have out there? But he's to the point now where they're recruiting better than they ever have. Obviously, he recruited Ty Jerome and those guys, and Kyle Guy and DeAndre. And I don't know that any of them was really highly regarded. I just think he's a very good judge of talent. But in terms of a salesman, he's not a salesman, but doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
I mean, I think you can compare JJ, Jeff Jones, yeah, too. Corey Alexander, Junior.
Yeah.
Burrow.
Oh, he was a very
his first class. Fury, Jason, Chris.
Yeah. And JJ is Corey, probably the best recruiter.
Corey Alexander. The guys, he was. I think he, you know, somebody was a good recruiter back then.
I'll tell you who was a good recruiter. One of my favorite guys in coaching, Dennis Wolf.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do any of you know Dennis Wolf or?
Oh,
I would put him right in the among the top assistants that have ever been there.
Right.
Yeah.
Of course, he was pretty good about telling me about what was going on with recruits, and also, you know, to me, being a great assistant wasn't necessarily doing a lot of good work at practice. It was getting the players. And he got Crotty, and he just, you know, got a lot of people in there.
No, he was after Crotty, but and Brian Ellerby was great too. And that's that whole time when JJ took over. He had a great staff.
Yeah. And what happened with Ellerby? I'm trying to think. I think he had a reputation as being a good recruiter, and I'm trying to think, where did he get? Did he go get a head job somewhere? I know last time I saw him, he was coaching.
Yeah, he went to Loyola after, and then he became the head coach of Michigan.
Oh,
coach. Yeah.
And I guess if you're not winning 20 to 25 games a year there, they're not going to keep you forever.
Yeah, he was I'm not. I forgot the teams. Maybe like Tractor Trailer, those guys he had. I'm not sure. TW Pioneer.
But I think
Robert Trailer.
Didn't he have some baggage, as I remember?
Yeah, they got violations and stuff that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It was that the guy Ed, who ended up getting indicted on a bunch of charges, but.
They had a really good point guard, right? The white kid, Coach Ellerby had, I forgot, at Michigan back then.
This thing here has a full-time assistant coaches list. How about Jason Williford? I mean, it's he's got to be right up near the top. I just, you know, and he's been. What I like is that, from a media standpoint, I could call him and ask him stuff. And, you know, it's gotten so that it's hard to, you know, cover these guys now because they're, you know, they've got going 15, 20 different directions. And yet Jason Wilford, if I want to talk to him, he'll talk to me because he kind of associates me with having covered the team for 20, for 30, 40 years.
Continuity.
you know, and I don't know, I can't sit here and say, you know, he's a great practice assistant or he's a great recruiter. They, you know, I think he's done pretty well recruiting wise, but just for, I think it's good to have somebody who's been in the program.
Yep.
And it knows the school. And I think, you know, how long has he been consistent? I got this on here. Jason, from 2009 till the present, what's that, 10, 11, 12 years? And, you know, he probably could have gotten another head job, but I would think an assistant's job at Virginia, particularly if you're a former player, is preferable to a lot of, you know, mid-major or lower positions, head jobs.
I don't know how much weight being named the top assistant coach in the ACC carries, right? But he was just given that title for the award a couple months ago. So we'll see.
I was not, I don't know who votes on that and who, you know, you coaches. Know who votes. Coaches voted on it.
Well, I told him, Mr. Dowdy, I told him in a chat that me and all my guys have from back in the day, which includes Brian Smith, Corey, Uri, Jason. We say congratulations to you for being the top assistant in the ACC. And I'm like, Jason, congratulations for being the second best assistant in the state of Virginia, because Brian Smith is Jeff Jones' assistant.
Brian Smith, another great player. They did a good job of recruiting him, but I think he's one of those guys who, you know, didn't grow up, you know, idolizing Carolina or UCLA or some program like that. He was, you know, just down there in southeastern Virginia, just doing what he was doing and not really paying attention to who was recruiting him or who was going to try to give him some extra money or stuff like that. I mean, yeah, he has to be, I don't know, top five players ever to come out of there.
We'll talk about that in a minute. You keep that thought.
Top five. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, he is the all-time leading scorer.
Yep.
By 200 points over Jeff Wayne.
Pretty
what
impressive.
What are some of your favorite, after doing this for so long, what are some of your favorite memories, if we can keep it to maybe five? 4 to 5.
Oh, wow. Well, obviously being in Barry Parkhill's apartment when he told that woman that he had an old college friend there. You know, just my relationship with Ralph. Ralph never was too big for me. And in the 30 years or whatever since then, you know, I can call him and, you know, he isn't necessarily going to be the greatest interview, but he's welcome. And, you know, signed one of those bricks for me last year. And let's see some of these other guys. I mean, as far as Curtis Staples from Roanoke. And, you know, we haven't had too many players there over the years. Staples, I remember his final game, I believe, was against Maryland, and he went out in the crowd to hug his mother at the end of the game.
Richard Morgan.
Richard Morgan, okay. I didn't know she was listening to everything I'm saying here. But, I think a highlight for me has been dealing with a lot of these players over the years that I covered, like Richard Morgan. I still keep up with him. Talked to Crotty a lot. And did a story recently on J.R. Reynolds, who's really kind of a forgotten player. He's scored 1,600 points. He's from Roanoke. He's played in like 20 different foreign countries in Europe and Eastern Europe. And let's see, who else did I know pretty well? I still know Wally. Ran into Wally at Walker at the last game last year. Corey is, he's kind of in a group by himself. He was on TV last night. Did you know that? I turned on the TV last night. It's Oak Hill Academy is playing some school from Lake Norman Academy from down here in Charlotte. And they're playing at Oak Hill. And Corey is on the sidelines as assistant coach at Oak Hill.
Of course, yeah.
And
who knows? And who knows what else he does? Because he's doing TV commentary. His son plays baseball at Norfolk State. His family is still around the Augusta County area, Waynesboro and Stanton. And he's a piece of work, and sometimes you can kind of tell who you know by checking your phone numbers. And that's I know I've arrived when I got Mark Jerome's phone number.
Arrived where?
That's right. So how about let me flip the switch a little bit. You talked about an interesting interview or somebody to interview. Who were the best? Let's say Ralph was not the best. The best
interview. Ralph was not the best interview.
So who was great? Corey
who was the, yeah, who's the best?
Smith, I get it.
I'm looking at number one and two. Tammy Reese was good. Yeah,
I know.
Junior was a good interview.
Right.
Sean Singletary. Now there's an interesting scene. Fifth all-time in scoring, over 2,000 points, 222 career three-pointers, 846 free throw. And, I think, I wonder why I guess there probably were other reasons why he wasn't more highly thought of by the pros. But I forget there was some guy from Philly, and Mark might know this, that who he competed with in high school. And the guy, I think he went to Villanova, but anyway.
Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, Kyle Lowry. And I think Kyle Lowry, always was, when they went pro, he was like a first round pick and had a great career, and nothing happened to Sean. I mean, I don't know how. Had virtually had no NBA career, and yet I don't know that he was any worse than Kyle Lowry. I saw Kyle Lowry play in college. I also saw Sean Singletary play very well, and does he get his is he looked at in the way he should be? I don't know why you wouldn't think that would be, he's the fifth leading scorer in school history, but I don't know that people look at him as the fifth leading player, which probably wasn't, but I think he was underrated.
That's pretty impressive to compare him to a guy making $33 million a year.
Is that Kyle Lowry?
Yeah. Won a championship.
Toronto Raptors, yeah.
They're the same age, no way.
Yeah, they went. Are they? Same area, grew up together. They're really tight.
I think Sean's a better player than him.
Sean was incredible. I mean, he was a beast. I think he got really injured. He got hurt. He got really banged up his last year, like shoulder, and then he had hip injuries. Then he went into the draft, I think, really banged up. And then it just kept – I just think that continued, right? He just
– You know where he is now, don't you?
Fork Union.
Fork Union.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, assistant at Fork Union.
I'm going to
shout out Sean Singletary.
Who was Sean Singletary's famous high school teammate?
The quarterback, Matt Ryan.
Matt Ryan, quarterback for the Falcons.
You're asking like TW, like TW's got the answer for everything.
No, I don't know about that.
That's like Bryant too. TW.
Right.
He's like, oh yeah, I got that one. That's TW's son.
And when Sean was a wide receiver, and you kind of think, maybe you should have tried football. Maybe he'd still be playing in the NFL.
Yeah, he was tough. He was really tough.
He probably wasn't disciplined enough. Correct. I mean, that's as I remember. But I wouldn't certainly wouldn't disparage his career because I thought he was a very good player. Yeah, really enjoyed covering him and watching him play.
So he's retired, right?
Yeah. They retired. He was the last player to have his jersey retired in season.
TW, now, who makes that decision?
So it's changed. It's changed. So Coach Bennett has changed the rules on retiring jerseys and numbers. So now you got to graduate, right? So I think it depends on the coaching staff.
You always had to graduate.
In terms of no, because Sean Singletary got it before he graduated.
But he was on course. Okay, go ahead.
He was on course, yeah. But he had not graduated. So now it's like you have to graduate before we. Okay. So there's no more in season jersey returns. You got to come back to get your jersey retired. I think I think they're just adding more layers to that. Like UNC added there. You got to win a national title, and you got to be.
Really?
Yeah, you got to win the Naismith. You got to hit those two things to get your jersey retired. It's a UNC.
I'll tell you what might be something interesting to find. Which program has the most retired jerseys? It might be UNC.
UNC has a lot.
Everybody up there.
Maryland also has a lot. Maryland retires everybody.
UCLA's got to have a lot. No?
Kentucky, don't get me started because one of the things that really bothers me is that Maryland's no longer in the league.
Yeah.
And I lived in Maryland. And I wasn't a Maryland fan. And
it's just
don't
weird,
look at myself as being from Maryland. But I mean, it makes so much more sense to have Maryland in the league. And Maryland's move to the Big Ten hasn't helped Maryland at all, from what I can tell.
Yeah. No.
They got a paycheck, I guess. So I was going to, that brings up a good question for that I had for you in terms of being in Roanoke, where it's mostly like Hokie land, right? Most people there are Virginia Tech fans. Well, for you covering UVA, what is that? Do you cater to your audience a little bit and kind of, you got some hate readers out there that just want to hear the bad stuff.
There was a lot more of that early on when there weren't all the sites and the various publications that you have now that, it's so widespread, the coverage, and I don't hear it as much anymore. When it was just Roanoke and Charlottesville and Richmond and Norfolk, there were only like four media outlets and very little TV stuff. And now it's like, if you look at the seating chart for a game, basketball or football media, and it's been different this year, but I mean, you got 30 or 40 people there and a lot of times you just don't know who they are, what they might tell you their credential, but you wonder credential to do what.
Right. So back in the day though, what would you say? Would you say that you had to cater to your Virginia Tech audience a little bit or no?
Well, it was, it's been different over the years because for many of those years, Charlie Moyer was the coach and he was a complete gentleman. And, he didn't want to, he wasn't trying to, rival Virginia or whatever. He just wanted to, Virginia Tech hadn't been in the ACC all that time. When I started out, Virginia Tech wasn't in the ACC. And, that was some time later when that happened. So, there were stages when there are probably people who thought the Roanoke Times wrote too much about Virginia, given that, Virginia wasn't in the circulation area, but you don't get that much anymore. And then of course, the Hokies coaches, Greenberg and who's the guy at Texas, Buzz Williams and Greenberg were very, Greenberg had been a Virginia assistant, and that's where I met him in the mid-80s. Right. Oh, yeah, he was a UVA assistant. And, in fact, once he stopped coaching at Virginia Tech and moved to TV, he likes getting those UVA assignments because he knows some people. He coached for Terry. He was a grad assistant on the 84 team, which is
– That's right.
kind of the, oh, wow, the final four team that that never gets recognized. But so it was funny. He was at Virginia Tech, but at a time when they were at each other's throats in football and everything else. Greenberg never really had it out with Virginia because he had respect for the place dating back to his, I forget where he had been prior to coming to Virginia. I think there he'd been at one of
Bowling
those
Green?
Programs. Huh?
The Bowling Green?
No, he had been at a school
it's always Bowling Green. TJ.
I know. I feel like it is.
He had been at a school. He had been at a school where the head coach had gotten NCAA sanctions or whatever, and I forget if Greenberg was involved or not, but he didn't have a job, and Terry hired him at a time when he couldn't have gotten a job. And in fact, because of the time he spent with Terry, he had a good reputation when he got out. But
he was at South Florida. Virginia Tech yourself, or before that, Cal State Long Beach.
No, where was he at? Yeah, but where was he an assistant coach prior?
Oh, before an assistant coach. Oh, man.
Have that on there.
I bet when he was in South Florida, he was Lee Rose.
Yeah, okay. But I think
you know his name, Lee Rose? Was the head coach. He was Purdue, yeah. Then South Florida.
But there's something. So he'd been at some with some program that had NCAA sanctions, so he was viewed as kind of bad meat. And and so coaching with Terry for a year or two.
There you go, Pittsburgh. It was Pittsburgh.
That's where, I forget what that guy, Paul, I forget the guy at Pittsburgh who got zapped by the NCAA, but Greenberg had been on some shady staffs, and Terry basically resurrected his career.
Yeah, turned around after that.
I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, that's great.
I know that.
And Mike Malone, the Denver Nuggets coach, was a dobo for UVA.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
Is he still there?
Yeah, he's the head coach.
Malone's the head coach in Denver?
Yeah, Denver Nuggets.
Yeah. He was going, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dougie, you missed Dougie Fresh when you muted us for a second. I think to go attend something, you missed Doug Dowdy's comment about Pete Gillen.
And didn't like to talk about timeouts.
Timeout. I don't care about timeouts. I just didn't know. He didn't have any plays.
Xavier.
No, I mean, right? Like
Xavier.
We're up by three with a minute and a half left. Just go run. Go. Shoot. Like, slow it down. Pass the ball to Brian Stith. Get the ball in Corey Alexander's hands, right? Like, whatever. They had no plays. I asked him about that once, but I'm going to get in trouble again for saying that too much.
So, Doug.
I got to tell you a story. I mean, because I've forgotten most of the stories I've ever had, but I remember Corey had blew out his knee one year against, I think, UConn.
Yeah. Ankle. First game of the year.
Ankle. Okay.
Yep.
And so he sits out that year. He plays the next year, which is his fourth year. And then he decides to turn pro. So they've got a little press deal with him. And he announces he's turning pro. And we're walking across the basketball floor over there. It's me, Rich Murray, the SID, and Corey. And I don't know how this came up, but I mentioned that I had gone to Virginia. And Corey looks at me and he goes, "You went here?" It was like I had no I would have had no business going there. I wasn't nearly as smart as Corey Alexander, and how could I possibly have gone to school there?
Right, like don't put yourself on the same level as me, sir.
Yeah. that's
just Corey. Like, it's, Corey, all that, but like his IQ is so high, and the way he sees things, he's got a great wit. And I will tell you something. If anybody ever thinks Corey's funny at age 46 or 7 or 8, whatever he is now, all his jokes on TV are because of me and Chris Havlicek. Meaning Chris Havlicek, for the record. Like, I hear him talk about stuff and people laugh at him on TV, and I'm like, see, you're just using our jokes. But he's a really, really, you know, I mean, Corey's the best.
If you ever want to put him down, ask him where he had his signing ceremony, which I attended in Waynesboro, where they held it at the pool in the YMCA.
At the YMCA. Yeah,
I know. I was there for that. And I've covered a few signings over the years. He's the only one I know that signed at a swimming pool.
Hey, Doug, after being a graduate of UVA, how challenging it is to cover UVA sports objectively? And do you cover it differently because you have such a passion for the school?
I don't know. I think some people think you bend over backwards for the school. Some people think you try to be too fair. In other words, you know, that there have been people over the years who thought I was too critical.
Yeah.
And you know, you can't win. So I haven't heard that much over the years. I'm at the stage now where no one knows where I went to school.
Yeah.
Or if I went to school.
Yeah. Before the season starts, typically, do you do an outlook?
Not really, because with basketball in particular, you're still working at football at the same time, and it's hard to get around to it. I wrote two or three stories this week after the various Zoom calls, and they had the operation basketball was held on the ACC network, as opposed to when we all used to go down to Charlotte or Greensboro and spend the day there. Now we watch somebody talking to them on TV, which I don't know. I've been through enough of the other ones. There have been a lot of changes over the years, and not all for the good, especially for the media. But you know, it's you know, twice as many teams as there were before. There's all different kind of TV markets and all these magazines and whatever. And that's what I miss. I don't think I know the players as well. I have gotten to know some of the parents, which is interesting. If you know Charles Snowden, who's the football player, I was interested by that he was a high school basketball player and wasn't really being recruited for football when Virginia recruited him and signed him. And his dad recently sent me a picture of Charles Snowden in sitting with Roy Williams at a Carolina camp. And so I don't know that the Virginia fans would all want to see this of Roy Williams and that's, Charles Snowden. But yeah. It's really not like cool. I think Charles will probably hold on to it for a while. I mean, have a picture of yourself shot with Roy Williams when you were seventh grade.
In your years of covering UVA, have there been teams that you forecasted would do really well and maybe didn't perform as well as you thought they would, and vice versa?
Well, there were some teams that underachieved. A lot of people would say that the Samson teams underachieved, that they didn't win a national championship. And you look at some of the others and there are three, Virginia's had three ACC tournament champions. There was one obviously in Maryland and Greensboro and New York. I watched, you know, it's funny, and I guess I'm changing the subject here. I guess because it wasn't too much later that Virginia won the NCAA championship, that I think that the ACC championship they won in New York kind of gets lost in the shuffle.
I
the game came on the ACC network recently, and I was watching the game. I was thinking to myself, boy, that team was a lot better than I gave them credit for being. That was a pretty good team.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
And
I always thought at that point we became so good in the ACC and we understood that battle and we dominated ACC so much. When we got out of the ACC, it was different. So I never liked – back in my day, I loved winning the ACC tournament, which I never did. Went to the finals once. But at this point, I don't like to, you know, it's a big pool, right?
Yeah.
And we dominate the ACC now, thank goodness, and it's incredible to see and what Tony's done. But you get almost comfortable. I know this team. I know FSU. I know NC State. I know whatever, UNC. Who cares? And it was almost like detrimental, in my opinion, that year to have won it and expend the energy and then get ready for the next one.
I'll ask you guys the same question that posed to myself. I watched those last two games last year in Charlottesville, the Duke game and the Louisville game. And I'm thinking to this day, they could have won it all. I mean, they were really playing well at that time. Jay Huff made that same claim the other day. Now, I don't, you know, Jay kind of blossomed late in the year, but they were really playing well. And I was looking at the roster for this coming season. I'm sorry for changing the subject, but I was looking at the roster and Wolde Tensai, how good was he last year? And yet he's like a guy that no one talks about.
Right.
And
a game winner against UNC. It's like we've forgotten about that.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's something that he'll remember the rest of his life. And I guess I'm glad you pointed it out because, you know, I was thinking I thought he played really well, but I'd forgotten he hit that great shot.
At UNC. Like, think about that. UNC to get it. Anyway, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
All the names in the rafters there and you hit one. It's good. That's pretty cool.
At a time in the year where we were all thinking that any game might be the last because of the pandemic.
Yeah. We all went. We all. Oh no, Mark. You went. No, Mark didn't go to the Louisville game last year, right?
No,
it's me and his. That we went to the last UVA game. That's been a while.
Well, that's right. That's the last one, TW.
Yeah, that's the last game. I was going to ask you, Doug, for what did winning the national championship mean for you, both being a UVA grad and a fan, but also covering it all of these years? What was that moment like for you when we finally cut down the nets and watched one shining moment? Like, what was that like for you emotionally?
I'm there trying to figure out, because we take our laptops to the games, and in my particular case, the various laptops over the years, real crowd noise or really loud crowd noise can set off my computer. So I'm there the whole time. I'm like, please, I'm praying for my computer to stay active. So, and game ends at like 11 o'clock and your deadline's at 11:03 or whatever. And you've been writing all the way through the game. And, I guess over the years, I mean, very early on in this business, I learned that, you know, there was a line that was used, no cheering from the press box, that they would announce at various games over the years. And you don't hear that now, people cheering from the press box. I soaked it all in, but I didn't, you know, I'm not clapping or whatever. And I don't think, and over the years, I don't think the players or coaches expect me to. They understand that I'm not going to be there coaching. I do remember when my son was playing in the state semifinals in basketball, and I wasn't covering that. And they played Thon Maker in the state semifinals and won the game. And I was really an obnoxious fan the whole game.
That's great.
Just screaming at the refs and everything. But, you know, I learned very early on, quote, there's no cheering in the press box. So, you know, I can pretty much enjoy games without, you know, cheering or whatever, particularly if Mark Jerome's two rows in front of me. And I know at the first time out, I can go down and pick his brain. So
that's awesome.
Did that a few times over the years.
And never hear me act as a obnoxious parent.
Well, you know, you have disagreed with some things over the years, but once the two of us accepted Kihei Clark, we didn't really have anything to complain about anymore.
What? All right, that's another question, and not to call anybody out, but I'm basically asking you to. Most obnoxious parent over the years. You don't have to name a name, but has there been some that you've seen?
Yeah, well, there was one early on. His name was Carmichael. But there was a player when I first got there. I think he maybe completed his eligibility, named Norm Carmichael. He was like the first big man they'd ever had. And his father at U-Haul was sitting right behind one of the doors that you could go through to the floor. And he would like grab the door and like shake it against the wall over there. And whenever he didn't like the way the things were going with his son, this is Norm Carmichael. Well, Norm Carmichael finished his career, but the dad continued to go to the games and continued to rock that door over his head. So he'd seen his son's career, but he still had that hatred for the officials that he couldn't get rid of. So that was
so good.
You would be on that 50 years ago. That would be at the top of the list.
Funny.
I don't think there are a whole lot of them to be true, you know.
No LeVar balls to come through.
Huh?
No.
I said there's no UVA equivalent of LeVar ball.
Yeah. But no, I mean, I can't think of anybody other than Mark Jerome.
Yeah. Most famous UVA dad, Mark Jerome. Well, Howie Long.
Those New York guys.
Do you remember any parent that was really over the top?
Me?
Is that for me or Doug?
For Doug or Mark or whatever.
I'm not going to say over the top, but something I really enjoyed on Saturdays at the football games, Terry Kirby, he must have had 40 brothers and sisters. And so the basketball players all sat down behind with the football players, moms and dads. And dude, the Kirby family put on a show, but it was all positive. It was never negative stuff. They were there for a party, having fun. Terry's playing. And Chris Lade's dad was great too. He was a great fan. And so that was, you know, intimate for me. But in terms of my parents from my time, I don't know if anybody being like that. My mom got in a fight at an AAU game in high school, but different story.
I've really enjoyed getting to know some of the players over the years. Jay Huff's dad, for instance, is a minister. Yeah. And I would send him stories or whatever, and he'd appreciated it. And, you know, there's a guy, Jay Huff, who could look back at his career and said, you know, maybe I would have played more somewhere else or whatever, or maybe I could have played more at Virginia. But I talked to the dad, and the dad, you know, I probably talked to him 3 or 4 times on the phone. He never once said, you know, they're not doing him fair or whatever. And I really, you know, I'm sure there were some over time, but I can't really think of any really bad ones.
Yeah. Yeah, we had Jay's parents and Jay on the podcast, and they said it was tough. It was tough from watching him not get minutes when they thought he should have, but they powered through it. It's pretty cool.
Well, and he's you know, he's kept up a, you know, he doesn't complain. I've never heard him complain, even when he wasn't playing. You couldn't really read his face and say, "Boy, this guy's miserable." You never felt that way, and you know, good for him that he's been able to hang in there. All right, I got these top 20 scores right in front of me. I'm trying to think if there's any parents of. I knew Mike Scott's dad really well. I don't think.
Yeah, he was cool.
Yeah, I'd gotten to know him down at when he was at not at Fork Union, Massanutten. No, one of those schools. And
Chesapeake.
You know, J.R. Reynolds from Roanoke. I did a story on him this summer. He's kind of. Kind of a forgotten figure. Scored 1,683 points, 13th on the all-time scoring list, and you know, I don't think people realize how good he was.
Yeah, we had him on the podcast too. What about this one for you? Just out of memory, big UVA recruiting misses. We always get this question in our mailbags.
Ray Morningstar. That's why I got
Ray Morningstar. I mean, off the top of my head, Lavelle Blanchard was a big one. Ronald Curry, obviously. We've had a bunch. We've had a bunch over the years. But what about for you? Who do you remember?
I'll have to come back on and give you a list of that. But you know what's interesting to me is that Brian Stith's son didn't stay. Yeah. I mean, I think he had a pretty good career at Old Dominion.
Oh, he had a great career. Player there.
I believe, and you might know this better, TW, than I do, but I think he left because his family thought he was having too good a time in Charlottesville.
He's having too much fun.
Yeah, I believe that's what happened.
Yeah. We talked to him. We had him on. And we had obviously Brian.
You had Bryant on, yeah.
We had BJ on. No, we had BJ come on.
BJ was great.
He was great. He talked about his dream was to come, but it really was. I mean, if you're talking from a basketball standpoint, not getting the minutes, he committed so early, and then Malcolm had the extra year, and Justin was here, and he just thought he wasn't going to play at all, and wanted to be home with his dad, which is reasonable. I know that was a weird situation for everybody.
You'll have me thinking now for the next week as to.
Yeah, we'll have you back on. We do these mailbags every couple weeks, and literally that question comes up almost every time. What are the big recruiting misses we've had? People just want to know what are the big what ifs. Jay Willie answered it. He said Kyrie Irving, Joel Embiid, Victor Oladipo. Those were the three he thought we were close and didn't. Right? Was that right, Mark? I think those are the three he named.
Well, what was interesting, and when you get to recruiting, is that John Crotty, who had an outstanding career at Virginia, he's in the top 20 scores. His father played at Carolina, and he wasn't recruited by Carolina.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Nah, that's not true. He was, but King Rice signed early.
That's right.
Yeah.
King Crotty Rice.
And by the way, big King Rice top. Can't hold John Crotty's jockstrap.
Not
even close.
Sorry.
No, I agree with you. I mean,
King Rice should have played football.
I mean, I can't remember a single exciting thing about King Rice's.
No, he just wasn't tough enough.
He had J.R.
He's doing
Reed,
good
though.
Now, coaching, man. He's doing having a good career coaching. Monmouth.
So, Doug, you want to ask your question?
Yeah, we do this. You know, every time with a guy like you, and I'm going to hold you to the fire here. Mount Rushmore of Virginia basketball players. And you can have five.
Top five.
Four plus one. Top five players ever, UVA basketball. And if anybody should know, it should be you.
You named two of them already, right?
And if you don't have
Stephen Sampson.
Obviously.
Jeff Lamp. I mean, that helped put him on the map. Lamp and Raker. So that's three.
Wait, we Samson, Lamp, Raker?
No.
Stith.
Samson, Stith.
Oh, okay.
Lamp.
Yep.
And you know what? I think you got to put Wally Walker on there and Barry Parkhill.
I like it.
Can't argue.
I mean, obviously their numbers don't. My wife's down the hall, and she's giving me her. I'll give you her opinions.
Yeah, let's hear hers. Let's hear hers.
What's your top five?
UVA Mount Rushmore.
Samson Stith, although I'm not a Stith fan.
Samson Stith, although
Lamp, who was the greatest player who ever played there.
Did you hear that? Greatest player who ever played there.
All right,
I think you had to put Jerome Guy on there.
Jerome Guy.
I like it.
Wow. That's a modern. That's a modern lady right there. Very nice. Yeah,
mix it up a little bit in there.
I like it. Wait, was she not a Stith fan?
How can you not be a Stith fan?
Not really. Not really.
Oh, wow.
Why not? Doughty. We're going to have another episode with
Mrs. Doughty.
Mrs. Doughty.
All right. So who did we decide on? You know, I tell you what would be a good question, and perhaps you'll have me on at some point again. The five most underrated players in school history.
Yes. Right, so we do these lists constantly because this is what we do. We've had the most underrated list, and it's tough. We got a lot of heat for putting Travis Watson on that list.
That's tough, right?
Because people say, oh, he's not underrated. But in our opinion, we don't hear his name as one of the greats when he he should be up there. But anyway,
I tell you, a guy who's really underrated, who's a really good player that none of you saw, Othell Wilson.
Oh, I remember Othell. I had the bumper sticker when I was a kid. Othell.
Yeah, he's a
Jeff Jones. Jeff Jones says every time.
Yeah.
One of the best players ever at Virginia. Like, he raved about Othell, JJ. Yeah,
we hear that a lot.
Yeah. When he was my coach, he was the only guy he ever talked about. He never talked about Ralph.
Says a lot.
About himself. Yeah. Othell.
Who else said he was the toughest dude ever? Othell. Somebody else came on our podcast and said Othell was the toughest guy they've ever guarded.
Yeah. Maybe Jimmy Miller, right?
I think it was Jimmy Miller. Underrated. Well,
Othell was in that Samson Ewing game.
Yeah, that's right.
I guess you can make a list of top games ever. That would have to be on there.
I mean, the entire championship run would have to be in there, minus maybe Oklahoma.
Yeah. All right. So, what did I say for the five? Stith, Lamp, Wally Raker. Walker, Parkhill.
Yep.
I think I got five. Stith. Samson,
Lamp,
Walker,
Parkhill, Mr. Yeah. BP. That's a good list. Good list.
Come wipe that.
We appreciate you coming on.
I'd love to do it again sometime. So let me.
Absolutely.
Keep me in reserve.
Oh, maybe the next mailbag. We always do these. We'll have you come on the mailbag because we get fan questions, and then we get we'll do a list and have you come on. We'll preempt you. We'll send you the questions and the list so we can do some research.
You know, the one guy I didn't mention, and I actually interviewed him a couple years ago, Buzzy Wilkinson, who's third on the yes. all-time scoring list. He's the only one of these top 20 scorers that I never saw.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the all-time career highs, it's Barry Parkhill's 51, and then the next nine are Buzzy Wilkinson. It's like
incredible,
he's 49,
right?
He's 48, 47. He's the rest of them. So
he was probably like in Mem Gym, throwing it off the rafter into the basket,
One more random question for you, Doug. Melvin.
I once got rim at the old gym. Mem Gym. I once got Rem at Mem Gym.
Oh, nice. I was going to ask. Speaking of, I
challenged that, by the way, but whatever.
No, speaking of Mem Gym,
50 years ago, I was move a little
that's,
better.
That's not a bouncy gym. That's not the Dean Dome where I got a rim.
Oh.
Oh yeah. I was going to ask you about Melvin Whitaker. What do you remember about that? Speaking of Mem Gym.
Was he at Oak Hill? I think he was. I think he was at Oak Hill for a while. Well, I'd have to go back and read up on that. That's kind of how. What year would that have been?
That was the second, right before JJ left.
96, 97.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Cover. He was the only other cover of Sports Illustrated, and for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Was he on the cover of Sports Illustrated?
Yeah, he's on the cover.
What is he doing now?
We would love for him to come on and talk to him. We were going to ask you. We tried to track him down.
I can track down some of these people, but Melvin Whitaker, I don't know.
that's it. That's our white whale.
Yeah, that's your homework.
We're going to get him. Yeah. Melvin Whitaker. We asked JJ about him. He talked about him for a second. He said that was pretty cool. Anyway,
maybe next time we get Ty Jerome on, you can ask him the question again and see how it goes. That'd be fun.
I don't think Ty has ever forgiven me for that. I got along great with his father, and I actually went to see his son play last year so I could give a review. But I don't know, Ty's always been somewhat cool toward me. I know those media guides that, he probably wouldn't have otherwise.
Absolutely. You're not the only one.
What was your assessment of Kobe? Are we allowed to talk about that? Yeah, there's not a recruiting podcast. Yeah. I always worry about talking about a recruit, but I guess he's now signed and delivered. What was your assessment of Kobe?
Oh, okay. I was thought you were talking about Kobe Bryant. my assessment was when the night I saw him, he didn't get to play very much. Did he play for? Who did he play? Did he play for Blue Ridge?
Yep, Blue Ridge.
They beat the North Cross team pretty handily, but a lot of substitutions. I would have liked to have seen him on a team where. He was a starter and you got to see more. I didn't get to see more that game. I tell you the one thing that I liked the way he passes the ball. I mean, no one ever says that, but I remember he was passing with either hands and accurately as well. And that kind of jumped out at me, but he didn't really play enough for me to really
give you a good assessment.
Yeah.
How is it looking for Kobe, Mark? Is he all set?
Well, it's funny you asked that. He's supposed to sign on Monday. But the school he's going to, UC Riverside, may be eliminating their athletic program.
What?
So, and it's a tough year for seniors who haven't signed.
Awkward.
Because of the additional year that NCAA has awarded winter athletes.
Yep.
And the transfer rule next year goes into effect. So it's going to be really difficult. Seniors who haven't signed right now, unless they're a top 50 player, they're in trouble.
So there's a risk he could sign and he could not have an athletic program next year. Yeah. Man, that's 2020 for you.
I'm trying. I mentioned Longwood as a place I'd like to – like, I don't know the coach there, but I think he's a really good coach. I think he may have been involved at UVA at some point, but he's a good coach, and it'd be nice to have Kobe in the area.
Wow, Doug, sounds like you might have some information that you're privy to that other people just aren't yet.
No, I don't really know the guy. I just like what he's done. I mentioned his name to you at one point.
Yeah, Aldridge.
Yeah. Who's the most famous basketball player from Longwood ever? That I might be wrong.
Kersey.
Yeah,
Jerome Kersey.
Jerome Kersey.
But I tell you what, who was the center on the, what was his name? Beth, who was that center that ended up at Longwood?
Pettinella? No, not Pettinella. Ducharme. Colin Ducharme.
Yeah.
Yeah. He got run off. That was a
shame.
Not
much the CW doesn't know.
That was a shame. I liked him.
Well, let me see. Ducharme.
Oh, he was great. He was
a beast.
Really good, yeah.
I think the issue that I've heard was they just didn't like the fact that he was so big. Like, they asked him to slim down and play a different role, and he got bigger, and they were just like, he was like Mr. Universe big.
Yeah, Coach Gillen
was like trying to do the run and go.
Who was the other dude? TW, the other guy we talked about who got crazy strong and played in like Estonia or somewhere afterwards.
As Pettinella.
Pettinella, yeah.
He was same kind of same build. Yeah, just became like bodybuilder esque. Like
he was in there with John Gamble.
He was squat and everything.
Yeah, it should be like a GQ like male underwear model probably.
Here's a guy. If anybody's listening to this who's really, really old, here's a name that jumps out at me. Otis Fulton.
You're gonna have to.
I know the name, but I have no.
He was the center on the 1976 ACC championship team, and I think he transferred somewhere too. He got letters in 76 and 77, and I think he ended up at like Longwood or one of those schools.
Interesting.
Doug Dowdy, I just want you to know you just accomplished something that I have not seen anybody do in the last 5 years since I've known TW. You just stunned him.
Yeah, well, anything prior to me being born, I have no clue.
Mr. Dowdy, you write this shit down, and we'll find out, and we'll find them. We'll find Otis, out, and we'll find them.
Oh, you want me to find Otis Fulton?
We'll look him up.
Yeah.
We'll have to have you come back on a mailbag episode for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
How many Otis Fultons could there be out there, particularly Tampa?
Yeah, that's true.
It's a great. He was on the first ACC championship team, and he was good, but he was kind of I think he got tired of it.
I had to do a reunion episode, first ACC championship.
This is kind of interesting where he lettered in 76 and 76, 76, 77, and 79, but I don't know what he did in 78, where they were 20 and 6 that year. So.
All right. Well, absolutely appreciate you again coming on. This is awesome. Really do.
Thank you. We've been trying to get you for a while and trying to coordinate this for a few months now. Jumping on.
Yeah. Next time, by the way, your wife's going to have to come on. We got to talk about
it. Yeah. We need it. Yeah.
Well, I just, concerned about the Gus Gerard dunking over Ray Morningstar. You know, I kind of wonder whatever happened to Ray Morningstar.
Another we got a few podcasts. We need the Melvin Whitaker, right. the Morningstar.
Right, just email exactly. And send me what I need to go out there and check on.
All right. Appreciate you again.
Thanks again.
All right, man.
It was fun. To you.
Doug, do me a favor, say hello to Allison and Amy for me, please.
I will.
All right.
They'll be happy to know that you're alive and kicking. So will you be at UVA at all this year?
This weekend.
I'm coming on Sunday. I'm coming to hang. Kobe's doing his national letter signing.
Oh, okay. Today,
so I'm going to be down there for a couple of days.
You driving or flying?
Driving.
You want me to go with you?
I'd love it. I got a couple of other people in the car. If you want to be in the car with a baby, absolutely, Dougie.
Me? I'll take the baby. Don't worry about that. DM me. I'd love to do that, bro.
We're on. All right, Doug. Thanks so much again. Always a
pleasure.
Look forward to talking to you, seeing you soon.
All right.
Take care.
Thanks, guys.